Hey, everybody, this is Libby Denkman. Before we get started with SoundSign today, I just want to remind you that today is Give Big. It's the perfect time to give the gift of nonprofit journalism to your entire community by supporting SoundSign and KUOW. If you're able, please head to kuow.org/donate to make a donation. You can also follow the link in the show notes today. Thank you so much, and on with the show. Last month, roughly 100 protesters gathered at the state capitol in Olympia. They were there because of Senate Bill 5599. It's a bill the Washington legislature recently passed to extend emergency shelter options for youth seeking reproductive or gender-affirming health care. But despite its specificity, the bill has been swept into a larger battle over transgender rights and parental consent.
Chants echoed throughout the Kentucky House chamber Wednesday, all as representatives voted on what opponents say is an extreme anti-trans bill.
Tense moments at Montana's state capitol, police in riot gear entering the House chamber, forcibly removing protesters, arresting seven of them.
Nearly every U.S. state is embroiled in a battle over transgender rights as Republican lawmakers push anti-trans bills and advocates fight for protections.
Just in the last 24 hours, Georgia and Iowa signed laws to restrict or ban gender-affirming medical care, and Nebraska advanced a similar bill.
The fervor over the issue has brought national attention to the Washington legislature from right-wing circles. Donald Trump Jr. called the policy evil. State Senator Marco Elias, a Democrat from Everett, is the author of the legislation and thus the target of a lot of vitriol right now. And he joins me now. Welcome, Senator. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Senator, SB 5599, it's still awaiting Governor Inslee's signature. But out front, I wanted to let you respond to some of the claims about this bill I've been seeing online. First off, does this bill allow the whereabouts of children to be hidden from parents who do not consent to gender transition surgeries?
No.
If this bill is signed into law, could a child run away from home to a shelter and get, quote, gender reassignment surgery all without parents knowing about it?
No.
Does this bill allow the state to take children away, all caps, this is a ripped from a tweet, take children away from parents?
Of course not. It does not.
So, Senator, what does this bill do?
You know, this bill really talks about what happens when vulnerable youth, in this case, trans youth that are seeking gender-affirming care, end up unsheltered, homeless or couch surfing. Maybe they've been kicked out. What do we do in that circumstance? Right now, state law says they can only stay in a shelter for 3 days before you have to get parent permission for them to stay longer. And that just presents a real barrier for some youth to access emergency shelters. So what we say is they can stay as long as they need to, and the Department of Children, Youth, and Families will work to initiate family reunification and try and bring the family together wherever that's possible.
So my reading of it is that the department already does this for children that are facing abuse, either, you know, physical or sexual abuse at home. This is expanding it to include these protections for children who are seeking gender-affirming care or reproductive care. And basically, you're getting the Department of Children, Youth, and Families involved in a similar way so that they can adjudicate or they can communicate with parents instead of the shelters doing the communication with these sensitive cases, in this case, gender-affirming care or reproductive care. Is that accurate?
That's right. And I think the real issue is we want these vulnerable youth sheltered while we sort through all the complications of the circumstances that they may be facing. We want them to be stably and safely sheltered. That's the core issue at play here, is let's make sure while we figure it all out that these youth are someplace safe and supervised and sheltered.
So you have the Department of Children, Youth, and Families involved. What does it mean to be pursuing family reunification? Talk to me about that component.
Yeah, and I will just admit at the top that I am not a full expert in the services that DCYF provides. So I'll just sort of share what I have heard, and obviously the department is the real experts in how this works. But essentially, you know, the department works to initiate connection between the family and the youth and some sort of service provider, whether it's a counselor or a therapist or social worker, to help facilitate that reunification process. And all of us know that the best place for youth is in a safe and supportive family environment. And if that's possible to achieve, we want to make that possible. Unfortunately, we also know, you know, some of these youth have been kicked out by their parents. They've been told to leave, and we have to make sure that they're safely sheltered while we figure out, their long-term survival or their long-term stability.
What was the problem that this bill is really looking to address? I think that you're getting to it there when you talk about children need a stable place from which to navigate what they're going through. And in the past, the 3-day limit on shelter was meaning that a lot of kids ended up on the street. Talk to me about the problems that you're trying to fix here.
Yeah, you know, what we've heard anecdotally from shelter providers is that there are some youth that are unwilling to seek shelter because they're, you know, concerned about this 3-day limit. And then there's some that will just leave before that 3-day limit is reached. And, you know, neither of those circumstances is ideal for a teenager that's living unsheltered. And we really want to make sure that we get them safe and stabilized. And then, like I said, let's get them reconnected to a caring community. But the most important issue is that they're not unstable. They're not on the streets. They're not couch surfing. They're not, you know, living in a car, those sorts of things. We want to get them into a place where they're safe. We know where they are. There's adult supervision. The Department of Children, Youth, and Families is supervising. We know that they're safe there. And then we can figure out the pathway to getting them reconnected with family or supportive community to make the right decisions for the long term.
I think at the core of a lot of concerns about this bill is the idea that parents would not be told right away where their children are. Can you speak to those concerns?
Yeah, you know, I think, first of all, law enforcement is notified in their local community and the state patrol. So there's never a circumstance where a family will wonder, is my child someplace safe? Absolutely, the authorities will know. They'll know where the child is, and they'll know that that child is safe. But again, there are circumstances where parents have kicked a vulnerable person out of their home and told them to leave because of their identity, or have done other really harsh and awful things to make that youth feel unwelcome and unsafe. And that's what we're also trying to address. You know, for parents who are supportive and loving and want to be helpful, we want to get the youth reunified as quickly as possible. That's not, unfortunately, the case for every person in this circumstance. Some of these folks face really hostile conditions at home, and we also need to make sure that they are safe while they, you know, continue on with their lives.
So, Senator, a child has run away from home. They are at a shelter, and under this bill, SB 5599, we would see the state's Department of Children, Youth, and Families get involved in order to communicate with the parents and move forward. What's the difference between when a parent might hear about their child in a shelter under this bill versus under the current law?
Yeah, under current law, there is this guarantee that at the 72-hour or 3-day mark, they will be contacted to seek permission for that youth to stay. When youth are facing this difficult choice of seeking gender-affirming or reproductive care, that parent approval to stay is suspended so that the youth can stay stably sheltered and make sure that they can access the care that they need. That contact and that attempt to reunify the family will take place, but there's not this requirement that parents approve of or give permission for this shelter stay. We want to make sure that youth are safely sheltered, period, end of sentence, and then that we also work on reunifying the family and making sure that everybody comes back together where that's possible.
What about people who are traveling from other states? Most recently, a bill signed last month by Idaho Governor Brad Little prevents healthcare providers from providing any gender-affirming care for minors. So we're seeing just our next-door neighbors being a place where it's not safe for people seeking reproductive services, abortions, or gender-affirming care. We are going to see more and more, already seeing more and more folks traveling across state lines. What does your bill, 5599, mean for youth who might be coming in from another state?
Yeah, and I want to be clear that I would not encourage a young person in another state to travel unaccompanied to Washington to seek these services. I think that that is dangerous. But if a youth shows up in Washington unsheltered, unhoused, unsupervised, I think we have an obligation to make sure that they're safe. So while, you know, we're not encouraging anybody to do this because it's not safe for a young person to travel long distances like that on their own, if it happens, we've got to be ready to respond and make sure that that youth is safe and stably sheltered. So, you know, part of the rhetoric is that we're trying to encourage or drive youth to make these decisions. And I think that's born out of real ignorance. These circumstances are already happening. Youth are already leaving these circumstances, and we need to make sure that they're safe while we navigate how to get them reunified, how to get them connected to services and support so that they can thrive in the long term. We're not encouraging anybody to do something that's unsafe or unwise. It's happening already. We need to make sure that we're prepared to respond and support and ensure that these young people are safe and healthy and can thrive.
The criticism of your bill online is intense. It is implying that you are supporting the kidnapping of kids or the hiding of kids by the state. What have you seen in terms of the backlash, and what have you and other members of the LGBTQ caucus in Olympia felt since experiencing this?
Well, you know, fear is a powerful emotion, and there's, you know, no bonds that are stronger really than the relationship between parents and children. You know, and parents feel very protective of their children. I certainly understand and appreciate that. And, you know, I celebrate that. I am very lucky to have, you know, incredible parents myself. And I know how important that relationship is. So I think when you hear a twisted and distorted view of what this bill does, it really does trigger a lot of those very strong emotional connections we have as humans. That's why we're trying to get the truth out there. This bill is not about encouraging anybody to make a rash decision. It's about acknowledging that these decisions, in many cases, have already been made, and we've got to make sure that vulnerable young people are safe. There's also, you know, I think a lot of diversity of opinion on whether and when young people should be able to access gender-affirming care. That's already clarified in other parts of the law. So this bill doesn't talk about who can access care, at what age, or what kinds of care. That's already covered in other parts of state law. This is strictly about making sure when a young person is unsheltered, which we know right now and is not a safe circumstance for them to be in, it's trying to provide that pathway. And so we're trying to get the truth out there, but it's hard because the distortions just really trigger some really deep-seated emotions people have.
Yeah.
You know, I'm used to there being kind of pushback on advancements on civil rights for LGBTQ people. That's been my experience throughout my time in the legislature. But I haven't seen this level of distortion and manipulation and, you know, in some cases, really outright, you know, mistruth and lying about what this bill's doing. At the end of the day, I've had conversations with young people that have faced these circumstances, and while it's awful to read what folks are saying about me and about my colleagues, I know that this bill will have positive impact for young people who face incredibly hard and complex circumstances and just need safety and security while they navigate that. So at the end of the day, you know, folks can say whatever they want to say about me, they can say whatever they want to say about my colleagues. We are going to stay focused on making sure that vulnerable youth have safety and shelter and ideally get reconnected back to that loving community that can help them thrive in the long term.
And just to speak to the issue of the laws on the books regarding gender affirming care, the law in Washington remains 18 is the age of consent for gender affirming surgery without parental consent. Deirdre Bowen, a law professor from Seattle U, spoke to Crosscut about this bill, and she argued that the bill could have been written more clearly to help folks understand what it does and doesn't do, to avoid some of this distortion and misunderstanding that's happening. Do you find any validity with that criticism? Do you think the bill could have been written a little more clearly?
You know, I think if I had to do it over again, I probably would have, made the intent clearer, and often the legislature has, you know, intent sections with findings and things like that. I think, you know, it's regardless of how the bill was written, there is this sort of right-wing architecture that wants to twist and manipulate issues facing trans youth for their own gain. And I think no matter what the words on the paper would have been, we would have seen that same effort, because this bill is squarely about shelter. And as you've alluded to in this interview, a lot of the communication and rhetoric about it has nothing to do with shelter and is more focused on, you know, really ghastly descriptions of surgeries and things that really would disturb people's imagination. And that has nothing to do with the focus of the bill. So I think, you know, could it have been written more clearly? I think that that is sort of for lawyers to debate. I think no matter how we wrote it, we would have seen this pushback and this manipulation, because it is part of a concerted strategy across the country to marginalize a group of folks for political gain. And that is, to me, the most heartbreaking part of it, that we should really be focused on whoever our youth are, whatever identities they have. We should be focused on making sure that they're healthy, safe, and thriving, rather than sort of using them to score political points or to raise money or to you know, get more listeners.
The bill is currently on the governor's desk, waiting for Governor Inslee to sign. Do you have any indication of when he might sign that, or if there's any hesitation?
I have not heard any hesitation. I'm confident he will sign this bill into law, and I will, you know, let the governor's office speak to the timing of that. But Governor Inslee has been, you know, a strong partner in this work to ensure that LGBTQ people of all ages and from all parts of the community are safe in Washington. And I am 100% confident he's going to be with us on this to make sure that youth are healthy and safe and thriving.
Senator Marco Lias, Democrat from Everett and sponsor of SB 5599, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for covering this.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. And hey, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m., Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.